Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording it at 12:27 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is June 18th. Well, gold today tried again to get back above this $1,350 area and so far has not been quite able to manage it. $1,350 is the big level. I've seen more than a few people talking about whether gold can get above the $1,380 level, but that is to, I think, misinterpret the kind of trading that we've had over the course of the last 7 or 8 years. Every single time it's got above 1350, it's failed. And it's not so much about whether it can get above it, it's about whether it can sustain a move above 1350 is going to be the true arbiter of whether we're back in a demand-dominated environment. But this does look like a base formation. It looked like a base formation around this time last year too, and then it pulled back violently. That's just something that goes with the territory with gold. It does tend to be volatile, but of course, having experienced that drawdown and the retest of the $1,200 area, investors are understandably nervous. And the big question now is, how much further are we going to see, or how much longer is it going to consolidate in the region of this 1350 area before it can sustain a breakout? One thing, though, that is quite clear is the continued demand we're seeing for gold in other currencies. And when we look at it, for example, in Australian dollars, it has been able to sustain a move up and away and from the range, and that in fact is new all-time highs for gold in Australian dollars. Then in renminbi, it cleared the 9,000 level over the course of the last few weeks, and this does look like a really quite impressive breakout. When, for example, we look at it in British pounds, it has cleared the 1,000 pound level and is at new closing highs over the course of the last 7 or 8 years. So we're getting meaningful breakouts in gold in an increasingly large number of currencies. So that's, I think, one of the more important points. Gold tends to do best when it is appreciating in all currencies. And it is doing better now in an increasingly large number of currencies. Therefore, even when we look at it in yen, which has traditionally been a safe haven currency, it has been firming. And it's also been firming in US dollars. Well, we can see, for example, that the 150,000 yen level has been an important area of resistance for at least the last 6 years. When it can sustain a move above that level, well, then we really are back in a demand-dominated environment beyond this lengthy consolidation that's been underway now for years. But I think one of the more important points to highlight is that despite the fact that gold in yen has been going sideways for 6 years, there is a clear upward bias to trading. And that is supportive of the view that there is accumulation underway, that people are willing to buy the dips. So that's, I think, one of the things that is rather important, because what we had in here today was a clear statement from Mario Draghi that he thinks that the trajectory for interest rates in the Eurozone is to go down. This is really rather interesting, because when we look at the main refinancing rate for the Eurozone, it's at zero. And it's been at zero for years. They have experimented with negative deposit rates. But if the Eurozone goes for negative straight out interest rates, that is going to create a phenomenal opportunity for a euro carry trade. And that's something that is starting to spur investor interest. The big question that has been sitting out there that has not been answered over the course of the last few months, in fact over the last 7 or 8 months, has been, where is the next big source of liquidity going to come from in order to motivate investors to start taking on leverage again? Well, negative interest rates in Europe is certainly a clarion call to traders all over the world to come borrow in euro and go off and invest it in more higher yielding or better performing assets globally. Capital is both global and mobile. It will go and find the most attractive assets. If you can borrow, well, it, perhaps another way to put it is, if you can get the ECB to pay you to take money off of them and go off and invest it in other assets, then valuation really doesn't matter. I posted a robust defense of the Case-Shiller or the Case-Shiller the PE ratio in here today. And the arguments that they make about valuation and about expected future returns make a lot of sense, but they don't take any account of human nature. They don't take any account of the potential for bubbles to emerge. What they do highlight very clearly is that the greater the overextension relative to the trend mean in terms of valuation, the greater the potential is that you're eventually going to get a reversion back to that mean. But what they have no way of telling us is how wide that overextension is going to become. And something that I'm rather conscious of at the moment is that there is a cottage industry after developing which is predicting recessions. Everybody is now looking at exactly the same things. Everything that, and I'm seeing an increasingly large number of indicators, the kinds of things that nobody was really talking about over the course of the last few years are now really starting to come front and center. So, for example, when we look at private construction, this is another one of these indicators that every time it goes negative, it has coincided with a recession. So private construction spending is going downwards. That is obviously pointing towards a recession, if we simply take that as an independent variable. If we look at the PMI figures all over the world, it tells us that we have negative figures in China, Japan, South Korea, Germany, Italy, the UK. They've just gone positive again in France, and they're still positive, although trending downwards in the USA. Well, then that does clearly suggest that there is a knock-on effect from the trade wars in these manufacturing sectors, and manufacturing does represent a significant source of economic growth in a large number of countries. So that is important. Retail sales, on the other hand, are still doing fine. And housing starts are starting to improve. So those are important. But it is perhaps the rebound that we've had in terms of the stock market is one of the more important factors. When we look at the upside key reversals that we had from the major stock market indices over the course of the last 3 weeks, this is a very significant development. That was a rollicking big upward dynamic that we saw 3 weeks ago. We're now starting to get upside follow through, and we're within just a few points of the all-time highs for the S&P 500. This continues to look like a bullish consolidation. Now, if the Federal Reserve is on the cusp of lowering interest rates, and that's a potential outcome, whether that happens this week or whether it happens in July, as long as we do get interest rate cuts soon, then there is the potential that they can extend this cycle. That's something that is worth considering. Now, there are obviously a number of headwinds. There are a number of lead indicators that are starting to roll over. That means that we cannot be 100% sanguine. We have to pay attention to the consistency of the trends. This is the most important time to be cognizant of the fact that the market has been ranging. Ranging means that supply and demand have come back into balance. When supply and demand come back into balance, the arguments for both the bull and bear case are equally weighted. Therefore, it is natural that we are now more aware of the bearish case than we would have been at the end of 2017, because that was a heavily bullish environment where the demand dominated sector made the argument for a bear cycle to be much less convincing, and therefore nobody was making it. We also didn't have the confirming evidence in terms of all of these indicators that have been turning down over the course of the last few months. Well, all of those things very clearly state that we definitely do need to see sources of new liquidity to come in to support this market, because this market has been liquidity fueled. And it is liquidity fuel is going to be the most important factor. It's not just about quantitative easing, although the measure that I've developed for looking at quantitative easing has been turning upwards over the course of the last month. And that's important. It has now broken the downtrend since the beginning of this year. Now, the two points that are going to be important there are going to be the size of any liquidity provision that comes through, but also it's going to be about the strength of the dollar. And the dollar has been firm over the course of the last few days, and it was in positive territory again in here today. Now the big question is whether we're going to see some dollar weakness starting to come through if we start to see speculative interest starting to rise again. Of course, a very acute move that we've seen in the bond markets has been as much about pricing in interest rate cuts as it has been about a safe haven. And because investors have been pricing in recession risk, there has been a very considerable move in the bond markets already. But when we think about the trend, well, it is overextended. It is susceptible to some consolidation in here. It's going to have to sustain a move below 125 to question the consistency of this advance, but we can't be surprised if we do get some consolidation in terms of bond prices, and most particularly if that coincides with a breakout on the upside for the major indices. That, I think, is one of the more important points. The very big question, and it's something that Morgan Stanley has been very clear about, is their expectation for an earnings recession, that earnings are going to disappoint when they're reported for the second quarter. Well, that is obviously going to be a risk, and that's something that could curtail the ability of markets to rally. It would catalyze the central banks of the world to start cutting interest rates more aggressively. Well, Australia is certainly cutting interest rates now, and that has resulted in the dollar failing to sustain the move very briefly above 70 cents. It is short-term oversold, so we're starting to get some steadying in here, but the absolute minimum requirement would be to sustain a move back above the 70 cent level. With the prospect for additional interest rate cuts by the RBA, the ASX 200 continues to extend its breakout to new highs, and it's very clearly supported by the weakness of the currency, as well as the outlook for speculative interest to increase as a result of lower interest rates. And it does look like we're going to see the index push on to at least test the peak that we saw back in 2007. When we look at the All Ordinaries Gold Index, then it gives us a good example of how gold shares are starting to perform now. The index had consolidated in the region of the peak from back in 2016 and then has broke emphatically higher over the course of the last few days. Now, when we think about US gold miners, then they are also starting to do better from here, but they are contending with the strength of the dollar over the course of the last few years. But that is now pushing on to a new closing high over the course of the last 12 months, and potentially at least in the process of breaking its sequence of lower rally highs. So Gold miners have been out in the cold for a long time, and this does appear to be a set of circumstances that could start to reinvigorate demand. Well, with investors beginning to start to think about the outlook for a carry trade and additional liquidity provision, we're starting to see some interest coming back into global economy plays that have been sold off aggressively, and copper rallying in a reasonably dynamic manner in here today from the lower side of this range that's been underway for the last 10 months is a positive development. Nickel prices were also in positive territory in here today, and that is at least now starting to demonstrate some support around the $11 area, which had been resistance before prices started to stabilize at the beginning of this year. Well, the potential, at least, is that this turn towards looser monetary policy is something that is going to have an impact on the global economy. And then we have to think about what is it that China is going to do. Well, there are no easy answers for what's going on in Hong Kong, and but what they are definitely doing is trying to ensure that there is no news on the financial front. China ran an enormous fiscal deficit last year, and it has not been tightening policy in here at the moment, and we continue to see news that property prices continue to march higher, so that is supportive of the view that they are still stimulating. The renminbi was stronger in here today, and this is the strongest close we've had, or the most dynamic move, at least in the last month. When we think about what's going on in terms of the Hong Kong market, then the H share index has at least stabilized, and it still has potential to unwind its oversold condition, but it's been really very quiet over the course of the last month. The Indian market had pulled back rather sharply yesterday, but it was relatively unchanged in here today. This is another index that has got some overextension relative to the trend mean that it has. So it has room to consolidate in, but this still remains a reasonably benign environment. I think if we take a big step back and we think about what we can anticipate from markets, well, we're at a decision point. This is, and the investors are waiting with bated breath to hear what happens in terms of the Federal Reserve's monetary policy. If they deliver on interest rate cuts against a background where liquidity is starting to come through from Europe as well, then that is likely to represent a bullish phenomenon, most particularly in terms of the liquidity provision and the kind of leveraged plays that have helped to stoke investment demand over the course of the last decade. But we now have an important touchstone in the region of the trend mean, and that is, I think, a pretty tight stop in terms of the outlook for the market. So there is the scope that we could have a significant breakout. If we do get that, then this will have been a medium-term consolidation, and that would hold out the prospect that we are moving into the bubble phase of this bull market, where valuations that are currently reasonable would become really quite unreasonable. It's at that point that the big value arguments and the potential for mean reversion in terms of valuation would become much more relevant. I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.